with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Normally on a Monday, we've got Jim Traber in here. He is not going to be able to make it. He had some trouble getting home from Alaska on his trip home and had to stay in Albuquerque longer than he thought, so he's probably asleep right now. You'll probably hear him at 2 o'clock, though, when his show is on. But not only Jim's a Steeler fan. We actually have a guy that played for the Steelers in here instead. Vance McDonald's going to be along hanging out today, and I'm just going to kind of ping-pong things off of him to see, just ask him questions. Have to do with what happened over the weekend, but also his story and his playing career and all that. So it's going to be a lot of fun here today with Vance in. Could hit some British Open. It's British Open week, the 150th British Open. It's at St. Andrews, the home of golf. Could it be Tiger's last time to actually be in good enough shape to compete? We'll see. Xander Schauffele is on a heater. He's won his last two official starts, also won that J.P. McManus Pro-Am last week as well. And then, do you like the way that the British Open is? Weather affects everything. If there's no wind, there's no rain, the dudes take it deep. If there is wind and rain, they don't. So it feels like there's a little bit more luck involved in this one. Over the weekend, Novak Djokovic won the Wimbledon, nudging ahead of Rafa Nadal for the all-time majors list. But that's not really the story coming out of that. He's not going to be allowed to enter the country here in the U.S. to play the U.S. Open because he's not vaccinated. I'd love to get Vance's take on that because the body is temple is a thing for those professional athletes, and he's got a stance that he's not going to break it from. Oklahoma hot on the recruiting trail. Over the weekend, they picked up five commits last week to jump from like 41st to 11th on one of the rankings. Talk about that. And then the little kiddos, the boys, 8U, 10U, 12U, OK Kids regional baseball tournaments are over. State tournament brackets are out. We'll tell you who from around the area will be heading to state tournaments this week. Also wrap up the 25th annual KECO Moran Equipment Open from over the weekend out here at Elk City Golf and Country Club. That's what I've got on the list. Whatever is on you guys' mind, feel free to chime in. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We'll talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in. 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com. Download the Paragon app. You've got everything. You've got three radio stations here in Elk City. You've got the Penny News, which a brand-new edition of the Penny News will hit the website on Wednesday. So you still have time. Rush out. Pick up a free copy of this week's Penny News at your favorite local newsstand. Let's see. It's the 11th of July, so we're about, seven weeks away from high school football. That means the live stream of Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, will be back then. It's also in the app. And I actually remembered to record the show today, so we will have a Skinny on Sports podcast. Maybe not up today. We have to wait on Jared to get back from vacation to be able to put that up. But the Skinny on Sports podcast is available, KADSAM.com or on iTunes. All right, that's the normal list. Vance McDonald is in here. Vance, how's it going, man?
It's going good. It's going real good. I haven't been on radio in a long time, so.
I wondered when Sean asked me, like, how used to doing that? I mean, you were San Francisco, you were in Pittsburgh, Rice before that. How common was it for you to jump on and kind of do an interview on the radio?
Yeah, I mean, at some point, it just became second nature. And it's kind of funny because my wife jokes about it all the time. She's like, these things that are really uncomfortable or things that, like, I just don't have a lot of experience doing. She's like, man, just pretend like you're, like, doing a radio show. Like, it becomes so natural to you because you've done it so many times. She's like, I'd be terrified in front of all those people. But it really is one of those things you've done so many times now as a professional athlete. Like, it just becomes like breathing.
What was it something that, like, at Rice, did they coach you up on that stuff? Or some guys it's just more natural as it went along than others?
It was interesting because, like, it was almost like an awarded kind of moment because, like, after a game, the head coach would walk around Coach Bailiff and he'd be like, so-and-so has a radio interview after the game. And you're like, that means you knew you had, like, a really good game. So it was, like, some of those things I, like, took a lot of pride with it.
So better than a game ball even.
Exactly.
Vance is going to be in here. Let's hit the golf tournament this weekend. KECO Moran Equipment Open 25th anniversary one. It was a roaring success. The only thing that stood in the way on Friday, at least, was a little bit of weather that forced the players' party, the dinner, to move locations with a little bit of rain there on Friday night. But horse race, 24 participants, the most that has ever been. And so what happened was, if you're not familiar with what a horse race is, it's just individual guys playing a hole. Whoever has the worst score is out. If there's guys tied for the worst score, depending on how many are eliminated, then they just have a chip off, and whoever chips it further away, they're out. And you go around until you have a certain number of guys, and at the end there's two, and they go at it. And so we played both sides, five holes on each side of the golf course. So we played 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14 on the back nine. And then we played 1, 4, 5, 8, and 2 on the front nine. The reason being, number 2 green, number 14 green are right next to each other. So that way everybody could join up and then play the last four holes from there. As it turned out, Noah Allen, former OU quarterback that was on the Moran Equipment team, he was the horse race champion. Major Manzingo from Tyler, Texas, he was second. And then a local boy, the club champ, I'm not say boy, he's kind of an old man, Mike Wilson, the club champ out at Elk City right now, he ended up placing third. So that was Friday. I went and had the players' party. It was a great time. Food was excellent. Poppies did a heck of a job. There was the one thing that was universally positive over the weekend was the ribs. That's all I heard, was how good the ribs were. So that was fun. Then we started out on Saturday morning. I got all 72 teams out. By the time it was all said and done in the championship flight, the back nine bandits, Blake Berry, Zach Owens, I can't remember the other two, they won by two shots. They shot 20 under par. A big part of what they did was they eagled number 15 and then the drivable par 4, well, for them at least, for most of us not. They drove it on 16 and made an eagle there as well. That kind of separated them from the field. Three-way tie for second, Anadarko Dozer, Path to Miracles, and also the Cleveland Indians. It's a team from Oklahoma City, Chase Lindsay and his guys, that come out here about every year. So they all tied for second. They decided to split it because it was 105 and everybody was tired and you know, worn out. So they went on down life's path with splitting everything there in the championship flight. A flight, S&S Quality Carpet was the winners, tying with L&R Tire. And then the playoff hole, I think it was number 2. I can't remember which one it was. Anyhow, S&S is the winner, L&R second. Now, that could be flipped. Now that I think about that. Because L&R had nothing. Yeah, L&R's the winner. Because they had nothing but threes on the front nine, and the first playoff hole was number 1. So L&R's the winner. Excuse me. L&R's first, S&S second. Four amigos. That's Trace Hill, Tate Trotter, Barry Trotter. They were third in A flight, beat Paul Gunkel, Dustin Gunkel, and those guys out in a scorecard playoff. B flight, three tied with 61s. The winner was Bird Equipment. Bird Equipment edged out CTC for second, and then Paul Jones for third. C flight, Evolve Equipment was first. The Goat Locker, that's Callan Nichols and a bunch of his Navy buddies that come every year. They were able to cash a ticket with second place finish, and then Keith's Butcher Shop was third. How much golf do you play?
I always joke and say, if you want to have a good time, come golf with me, because I've only played 3 rounds of golf in my life, and you'll get a lot of laughs watching me play.
Is that just something that you never picked up, or you just didn't have desire, or what's up?
I have the desire. Like, I want to be able to play golf well, and I'll say, you know, of the, you know, the holes that I've played, like I said, it's been 3 rounds. One of them involves some adult beverages, but I can't really count that. But I hit one good shot basically in the 2 serious rounds that I played, and I'm like, I want to do that over
again.
And over and over again. And that's what's kept me that's what's kept my motivation of being able to play legitimately. But yeah, I need to get on the course out here and start practicing.
Yeah, that's all it takes, is the one you don't even feel it come off the club, and you're like,
that's it.
Look at that go.
Look what I can do.
We're hanging out with Vance McDonald here in studio today, wrapping up the KECO Moran Equipment Open. It was an awesome time. It's a lot of hard work. It's probably the most stressful week of my year, just because if anything messes up on the teams, it's my fault, because I'm the one with the pad writing them down. So I always look forward to about – as soon as the afternoon tees off, and I know that everybody that's supposed to be here is, and there's not anybody that thought they should be here that shouldn't, I feel good. had that, and then the OK Kids Regional Baseball Tournament. So 8U, 10U, and 12U all across the state of Oklahoma. A couple of the local teams in 8U, at least, were in Kingfisher. We talked about the results Friday from Thursday. Then on Friday, so the Elk City Fire Frogs and also Cheyenne were both there in Kingfisher. Both had won their first games. On Friday, they both lost their first games. Alva beat Elk City 8-7. Kingfisher beat Cheyenne 15-2. So that put them down in the consolation bracket, and that was a long road back to the state tournament if either one of those was going to make it. So Elk City turned around, beat Weatherford by a run, 8-7. Cheyenne turned around and beat Watonga by a run, 9-8. So that got us to Saturday. Those two teams actually met Saturday morning. Elk City shut out Cheyenne 11-0. Got a date with Alva, who had beat them the day before. And instead of a one-run loss, it was a one-run win. Elk City beat Alva 10-9, which put them in the regional finals, more importantly, into this week's state tournament over at Clinton. They lost to Kingfisher 14-1. I was told Kingfisher is really, really, really good. It'd be one to look for this week over in Clinton to win it all. But Elk City Fire Frogs are in to the 8U state tournament. That'll be at Clinton. Brackets are out for that. I think they play at 2:30. Yeah, 2:30 on Thursday against the Shawnee F5. So 2:30 Thursday at Clinton for Elk City Fire Frogs and the Shawnee F5. Also, in that same blue bracket, the Arapaho Indians are into the state tournament as they will play at 5:30 on Thursday against the Poteau Pokes. So Arapaho and Elk City both in the blue bracket in 8U. Let's see about the red one. The Hobart Hitman are there as they came through their regional. They'll play Clinton Maroon at 5:30 on Thursday. And that'll round out the guys from 8U that are into the state tournament. 10U regional, one of them was held at Elgin. Navajo is the champs down there. Purcell, the Purcell Legends, are the runners-up. So both of those teams from Elgin will be into the state tournament. That's actually in Salisaw starting tomorrow. Then there was a 10U regional at Weatherford. On Friday, Merritt beat Arapaho 15-2 to eliminate the Indians. Weatherford turned around and beat Merritt 11-5. What we thought was eliminating Merritt, and that meant Weatherford and Sayre would be the regional final, both into the state tournament. Turns out Weatherford, they just don't want to make the trip. And so Merritt actually gets into the state tournament. So the Merritt Drillers are in the 10U state tournament. You got kids.
I do.
So Saturday, my son plays on the Sayre team. And I had to be at the golf tournament, obviously, working our golf tournament. So I'm watching Game Changer, which is awful. It's so much more awful than being there. Like, if you're being there, you know what's going on. You can see it with your own eyes. You're like, okay, that's how it happened. You mm-hmm. know, all you're really seeing on that Game Changer is, like, results.
Right.
And so it's bottom of the first, 1-0. My son's at the plate. He's got a runner on second. And all of a sudden, it's 3-0. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, processing it as fast. That field's short. And so I text my wife. As I'm texting, did he hit it over the fence? I get a text that said, he hit it out. And so it's the first time he had ever hit it over the fence.
No.
In baseball. Saturday, Wyatt Compton. Awesome.
Good for him.
I missed it. And nobody ended up with the video.
Oh, no.
Which is hard to believe in this day and age. That's that true. Nobody had their video. My sister... actually, she was just about to take a video, and she's like, no, I haven't seen a play in the whole tournament. I don't want to jinx him. And then he hit it out. And so, but anyway, so Sayre beat Weatherford 6-2. So looking forward to tomorrow over in Salisaw. Sayre Eagles will play Purcell at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. They are in the red bracket. And let's see, Merritt's over here, same time, 6 o'clock. They'll play Stillwell. Some other teams from around the area, the Hobart Sluggers are in, as they'll play at 4 o'clock tomorrow. They've been a good team that's been playing really, really well in some tournaments out here as the summer has moved along. So Hobart will play Cameron LC Patriots. Anyway, at 4 o'clock. So that's at Salisaw. That'll be going from Tuesday all the way through Saturday for the championship games. Then up in 12U, Midgets. The regional at Woodward. On Friday, Elk City beat Mangum 6-2. The Crushers beat the Mangum Cubs. That put them into the state tournament and into the regional final. So they turned around. Clinton beat Cheyenne out. Mangum knocked Clinton out. So that set up the regional final between Mangum and Elk City. And actually, the Mangum Cubs came back and beat Elk City twice. beat them 10-4 the first game, 13-3 the second game. Both of those teams into the state tournament. Mangum goes as the regional champion. So that'll set up the 12U bracket over in Weatherford. The Elk City Crushers will play in a Darko Purple at 2 o'clock. Weatherford Gray is in that one there at 8 o'clock against Chickasha. That's red bracket action. Then on the other side in the blue bracket, the Mangum Cubs will get Davenport at 2 o'clock in the first game tomorrow. And Mount View Godibo's got a team in it. The Tigers will play Stillwell at 6. And then another Weatherford team, the Weatherford Black, will play Tuttle at 8 o'clock. So that'll we'll keep you up to date with all of that. I'll know the results from at least the 10U one with maybe and hopefully getting to slide over to Salisaw at some point ahead of what's coming up on this Saturday. So we had the golf tournament last Saturday. This Saturday, it's the 8th annual Kids Fishing Derby. You ever been to this?
I have not.
Oh, it's an experience. Now, are your kids do your kids go fishing at all?
We actually have, yeah, for sure. We fished, I think, 3 times in like the last 2 weeks.
Now, so are they like serious fishermen?
No, I mean they have like the 3.5 foot poles,
just
kind of Spider-Man
bobber
yeah,
hanging out.
Exactly.
That's perfect event for them because some kids, you know, they're like serious, like throw it, reel it in, try to catch bass. This isn't the spot for them because there are so many around the pond out here, over here at Ackley Park. There's so many kids. It's almost like you need like cubicles, like slots to just go straight out and straight in.
Yeah.
And sometimes if some of the bigger fish end up catching about 4 or 5 poles as they get
awesome.
As they get
yep.
brought in. But 8th annual Kids Fishing Derby here at Ackley Park. It's going to be – so the Fishing Derby, 8 to noon, kids 15 years and under, 8 to noon. We got the specially marked fish. Some of them are the Big Fish Awards worth $100 cold, hard cash in your hand immediately. Once the guys from the Department of Wildlife cut that little tag off of the fish and make sure they're healthy. Bunch of sponsors on this. DJ's Rentals, Endurance Federal Credit Union, Hayden's and Son Record, Great Plains Mutual Medical Center Grants Auction, Conoco, Sonic, Hutch's, H2O Bait and Tackle, which is right across the street here, and a lot more that we'll be telling you about throughout the week leading up to the Fishing Derby at 8 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. There's also Presidio is involved this year. Presidio Family Day in the Park will be going on simultaneously with the Fishing Derby. It'll actually last to 2 o'clock, though. So mini golf, carousel, the train, all open, all free. Just come hang out till 2 o'clock with the folks at Presidio and, of course, us here at KECO. Fishing Derby is always my favorite thing that we do. Just there's so many kids, and it's such a really fun time. Mm. And hopefully it won't be 400 degrees, but surely by noon we'll be able to get out of there until it gets too hot, huh?
Yeah, I think we're supposed to get a break in the weather.
Hopefully rain tomorrow.
Hopefully.
Do we count Friday as rain? I mean, something fell out of the sky for a second.
Yep.
Vance McDonald, former NFLer with the Steelers and the 49ers, here this morning hanging out with us. All right, Vance, this is your segment.
All right.
Where is Winnie, Texas?
I always tell people it's in between Houston and Beaumont. So if you're aware of Houston, just drive an hour east, and it's right off the interstate. I said the only reason you're ever stopping in Winnie is usually to stay the night with your work in the oil field or fill up your car with gas or get fast food because that's about all we have.
So what fast food you got?
Taco Bell, Burger King, McDonald's, Wendy's, you name it. I mean, we have
Dairy Queen for sure.
Dairy Queen, yep.
All right, so you're there. You're looking around. What made you decide Rice was the spot?
Rice, believe it or not, was my only offer. So I had two major injuries in high school, one my junior season, one my senior season, that pretty much threw away all recruits. It just took me off the radar from any college. And it's just one of those things, you know, I look back and think, boy, what could have happened if what would have been different and not endured those injuries. But at the same time, I got an amazing education at Rice and really enjoyed it. And obviously I got to play in the NFL, so I wouldn't change any of it. But Rice was my only offer.
Did you have, before you got hurt or as you're realizing, hey, I'm pretty good, there's going to be people looking, did you have somewhere in mind that you were kind of hoping would offer you?
My brother was a regular student at A&M at the time, and I really wanted to go play at A&M. You know, it's interesting, like in high school, I watched Martellus Bennett play, and I would just like watch him the whole game on binoculars and just think like, man, I could do those things. And anyway, I applied to be a regular student at A&M, and I had, like, if I wasn't going to get a scholarship, which Rice offered me way late in January, so it was really late in the whole recruiting season, I was going to go try to walk on at A&M, But that obviously didn't happen. So, you know, Rice came along with the offer. But another college that was talking to me before my senior season injury was Baylor. So I had a lot of interest in going to Baylor. Actually, the person who repaired my shoulder, my left shoulder, my junior season was a Baylor Bear. And anyway, I just thought it'd be really neat to go play at Baylor. I always, you know, watch them on TV and stuff. But
yeah, yeah. And they were rolling right then, getting it rolling with RG3. You know,
yes,
was would have been there at that time. What was it about those places? You know, Oklahoma's got some recruits. Last week, everybody was up in arms wondering what's wrong with OU. Now, after the weekend, they've vaulted up the rankings. And I just wonder what, you know, those guys will say, you know, coaching and family, atmosphere and all that stuff. Is that really kind of something that you guys are looking for? Or is that just kind of coach speak and what guys say?
High school kids, man, they're so naive. It's like maybe the big recruits, you know, that have like, they make really big waves and wakes like in the recruiting process. Like that's one thing. And like it can bring along other guys. But for the most part, high school guys are just saying things. Like they really don't know what it's like to be like a grown up and say things like that. But it's really interesting to see too, like how the switch can flip, like in a university, like all of a sudden, like you're saying, they vaulted up a bunch of places. But I see it as sort of like, you know, ebbs and flows of the recruiting season of like different universities. Alabama's obviously always up there. You see Oklahoma, Ohio State making headlines, but they just kind of go through phases, right? Like it's and you know, the strength of the team obviously has a lot to do with it, but at the same time, if you have one big recruit going somewhere and then like it'll pull a lot of guys in too, you might have a bunch of guys that grew up and they're like diehard OU fans and that's where they want to play and that's where they're gonna commit. So it's really interesting. I think it makes college football a lot of fun.
Yeah, I wonder just how much of that is staged from the coaching aspect of it to try to create some sort of momentum.
Sure.
Like what's happening right now at OU. Hey, hold off right around, you know, 4th of July and in that, you know, fire off right then.
For sure.
Do you think that happens?
Well, I mean, think about it too. Like a lot of, you know, job security for college coaches is they're recruiting, right? Like they have regions that they go and they oversee and they pull guys in. Like you have a class that comes through, like the coaches obviously have a responsibility of like, you know, whether they're special teams coach, DBs, linebackers, whatever it is. But at the same time, like they're looking at their recruits, that class, and their success measures how long their tenure is going to be at that university. So it has a lot to do with their job. You know, going out, it's very serious. They're on the road a lot. And yeah, absolutely. If you could throw a little entertainment in there, a little flair in there to like bring in more guys, absolutely. Why not?
Now, hanging out with Vance McDonald here in studio, talking about the college football. How much do you think, I mean, it's obviously changed since you were in that spotlight, you know, going into getting recruited, then not, then signing, and then actually there at Rice. NIL is obviously a huge topic of conversation right now. As a former college athlete, how much do you guys really kind of need? Because I know you can't really work because you're on scholarship. So, you know, there's some things there. Sure, you get the education paid for and all that, but there's also some normal life things that you may not be able to do because you're actually not able to go out and earn money like a regular college student.
Right. And yeah, that was a big thing, like per diem, like what you get paid as an athlete. Like I went to school at Rice, who's in the middle of Houston. You know, going to a place maybe like Oklahoma State, like in the middle of Stillwater, it might be a little bit more affordable. I'm in the middle of Houston, like I could barely afford anything after I got done paying my rent, and like, you know, it was just, so you're fighting for things like that as an athlete. And at the same time too, it's a real struggle balancing school, and it's an amazing experience, you know, a learning experience, just from the idea of like, you know, as you're entering adulthood, you actually have legitimate, you know, you have to carve out time and balance what it's like to be a student, what it's like to be an athlete, and then marry those two things together really well. And it's a challenge for a lot of guys. You know, a lot of guys coming in thinking they're going to kind of just float through school and then just like go and ball out, like, you know, playing football. Mm-hmm. But it really is challenging, and it turns a lot of guys upside down.
You know, we all hear as normal people that, you know, 20 hours a week is all you can practice. And I think in some people's minds, they really kind of like they actually take that to heart. That ain't the way it is.
No, absolutely not. You're probably looking at like at least 40 to 50 after, like, and that's the other thing too. That's like this hidden part of being any kind of athlete, like the amount of time that you should spend in recovery and like trying to get your body right and, you know, just getting back, eating well, sleeping well, going to the training room, sitting on tables and just getting worked on, like, you almost do that more than in it practicing and sitting in meetings. But they say, like, organize 20 hours, mm-hmm. like, that's what it is, but, like, they don't accumulate and, like, count all the other minutes and hours that you're doing when you're spinning. You're not doing organized activities.
Yeah, I mean, like, what is organized? Like, actually on the field
on
or
on the field,
in the
whistle
meetings?
Blew. Practice starts, okay. Like, you're out on the field 45 minutes before that. Like, I was catching punts, like, I'm deep snapping and doing all kinds of stuff. Like, and I have a complete, like, lather going, right. Like, sweat. And practice hasn't even started yet. Like, I've already downed 2 Gatorades. So, anyway, like, all that doesn't legitimately count. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. And like I said, I think it's a great transition from going from, you know, being a kid, coming right out of the house with your parents, and going into adulthood, you learn a lot as a student athlete.
Yeah, because then you've got all that going on, 50 hours a week job called football. And, oh, by the way, you're still having to pass your classes, make good grades to be able to play football.
Make it to class.
That's right, and make it to class.
Those 5 a.m. workouts on Fridays got old quick, I can tell you right now.
How long did it take for you to realize, you know what, we need to be scheduling afternoon classes on Friday?
100%. Like, it took me, I think after my first semester, I was like, okay, Monday, Wednesday, Friday classes, I gotta get this down because I can't have an 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. Like, it's no way it's happening.
All right, so you go through Rice, conference, all-conference first team, your senior season would be?
I don't even remember.
I think 12, then going to the 13 draft. So you're drafted second round by the San Francisco 49ers. You play there from 13 through 16, and then you get traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I can't imagine too many people only playing for 2 teams in the NFL, maybe the 2 most iconic brands that are out there. How cool was that?
Yeah, I always tell people, too, you know, you can only go by off of stories, like what it's like to play for a franchise that might not have ever even made it to a Super Bowl, much less won one. You know, there's a lot of things that go and can be said about, you know, the culture of a building, the culture of an organization, and from top down, you know, what it takes to win, what it means to, I mean, go the extra mile, even in the cafeteria. I mean, hiring a professional chef staff, things like that, to make decent food, right, for our players and stuff like there's a lot of things that go into it. I want to hire a nutritionist. I want to have, you know, 4 trainers instead of the mandatory 2 trainers in a training room. Like, there's just a lot of things that kind of go along with it. And I was really fortunate to be able to play with 2 championship franchise teams for my tenure. And it was just, you know, like I said, I can only go off of stories from friends that I've met and played with that go to other teams. And like, dude, you do not want to be here. And I'm not going to say those teams, but there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. They're like, dude, this place is miserable. But it is a job that pays really well. And obviously they're getting to play football, and that's a lot of fun. But, yeah, there's a lot of teams that players just – you really don't – unless you're, like, on top of, like, the entire franchise and you're one of those players, that can bring a whole new, you know, world of opportunities and just – you get out of practice on Wednesday. You don't have to suit up full pads. They give you the day off because they want you to have an extended break after the Sunday game, things like that. And there's a lot of easy sort of things that can kind of be thrown at you if you're one of those players. But if you're not, it's just a grind. And when you're not winning, it's way, way more hard of a grind. Like, it's just, anyway, there's a lot of places that you would prefer to play for sure.
Hanging out with Vance McDonald here in studio. He's telling us about his experiences. You mentioned, and you've done it with college and in the NFL, the nutrition in the body and how much that matters, you know, to get to that level and then maintain that level. This weekend, Novak Djokovic was the Wimbledon champion, but he's not going to be allowed to come and play in the U.S. Open because of his vaccination status. He has been consistent on this from the very start that he doesn't know what's in it, and he's not going to put anything in his body that he doesn't know what's in it. You know, he's so regimented in that way. How serious do you think he is about that, and how much is it just him not saying he doesn't want the vaccine?
Yeah, I think he's completely serious. You know, I'm not going to dance around this. Obviously, this is a great political divide of a debate.
Sure.
I have not been vaccinated. And it's interesting, like, I just, you know, flip-flop back to the Steelers real quick. You know, after I retired, I stayed in touch. I was really close with our head trainer. He's been there for many years. He's a great guy, John Norwig. But he was just, you know, keeping up with me, too, because we had the farm out in Pennsylvania. He wanted to come fish. We stocked with trout. Like, that was kind of a fun mm-hmm. thing. But he was just asking. And so I probed him a little bit, and I said, you know, I'm just curious. You know, I was like, John, I haven't been vaccinated, but how many guys in the Steelers haven't been vaccinated? And he said, I think we're at 5 or 6 right now, depending on some of the movement that might be happening on the roster. And I said, man, I said, that little. And he said, yep. And he said, you know, for the most part, the majority of the team's been vaccinated, just because, I mean, and really this is a complete crazy sideshow, but it's just a circus, almost what the NFL sort of orchestrated and implemented for players that were vaccinated and not vaccinated. And it was for me, it almost been a make or break thing. Like, you had to eat in your car, separated from everyone else if you weren't vaccinated. Obviously, you had to get tested every single day, and people that weren't, I think you had to get tested once a week. And even that was draining, because it's just one more thing in your day that you have to worry about, right? You couldn't go in and use the wet room, like, you know, hot tub, cold tub, mm-hmm. plunges, things like that. Showers, if there are more than 10 guys in the room. You couldn't go in the training room if there are more than 10 guys in the room, which means, like, that's always the case.
Right.
There's always more than 10 guys in a training room. You can't go in the weight room if there's more than 10 guys in the weight room. And it's like, man, there's all these little things. And for the most part, we were in a bubble. So it's almost like, dude, we already have a hard, demanding, physically demanding job. You're making this even more demanding. And I understand, too, it's like, it's just the climate that we're in. You know, this mm-hmm. COVID's going around, that whole thing. But anyway, back to Djokovic. I feel like, you know, as a player that was, like, I haven't been vaccinated. I didn't get vaccinated. And I got out after the 2020 season, which 2021, they had a bat at it already. So it's like they knew what they kind of wanted to do as an NFL organization and how they wanted to implement certain policies and things. I just feel like it is, like you said, it is my body. It's my decision. And I just feel like if we could, as a nation, as people, as viewers, fans of the sport, if you could just remove judgment and just say, okay, I mean, that was his decision. And he's a fantastic tennis player. Like, he's unbelievable.
Yeah, maybe the greatest of all time.
Exactly. And, okay, like, yeah, he's not going to play in the U.S. Open. It doesn't mean, like, he's, like, I don't know, he's destroying the sport, or, like, he's disrespecting, you know, the game of tennis or anything like that. Like, he made a decision, and, like, there's certain things that he can't do, and that comes along with it, and that's that.
Yeah, and he seems perfectly okay with that.
Right.
So if he's okay with not playing, as much as I think it's ridiculous that he can't play,
yeah,
especially in 2022, instead of 2020, I mean, we're 2 years removed from not having a clue what was really happening. Now, I mean, people may not want to look at what's really happening.
Right.
But it's really, you know, it's crazy. But it is the way it is. And he made that choice, and he accepts that choice. You know, it's kind of weird how he's the one that's okay with it.
Yeah.
It
literally affects him more than anybody else.
That's right.
I don't know. I think if anything, you would go back and look at, like you were saying, like, you go back and look at that policy of just, like, if you haven't been vaccinated, you can't come and play in the U.S. Like, I don't know. I would look at that before I would look at Djokovic's decision to not get vaccinated, for sure.
Yeah, and maybe, honestly, maybe he can just fly into Mexico and walk across the southern border, and he can get there that way anyhow.
There you go.
How long do you think this has been a discussion for 2 years now? I mean, there's still, you know, in those protocols, and you're done. How long until sports, the NFL particular, just says, hey, it's like having the cold. You can play. Let's move on.
Yeah, like, I had it twice while I was playing. So, I actually, believe it or not, I was the first Steelers player to get it. And because I had a cough, so I felt bad for, like, 24 hours. I was quarantining from my family. Actually, we were flying back from Dallas. We played a primetime game, so I think we got back at, like, 3 a.m. I was so tired, and I had an hour drive back to the farm, and I was like, dude, I'm not doing that. So I just crashed in the city. Knowing I was going to have to wake up and go, you know, do Monday stuff,
right,
meetings and things like that. So I get a text from John Norwood, our head trainer, at like 5 a.m., this man never sleeps, but he's like, hey, I wanted to let you know you tested positive from your Saturday test before the game. Or no, sorry, your Sunday test before the game. You tested positive. It came back positive, so you're going to have to quarantine. I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, surely this is a mistake. I don't feel anything. Like, surely this is a mistake. And then, like, 12 hours later, like, I kind of had, like, back aches.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I just developed a cough. And because of this cough, I couldn't go back for 2 weeks just because I was coughing. And anyway, I just say, like, I felt, like, a little bit of heaviness in my lungs. But for the most part, it was just kind of like just getting a cold. The second time I had it, I didn't get any symptoms. I just tested positive. And it's just, I don't know. It's it's one of those things where I feel like, you know, in the beginning, it was so unknown and so scary. Like, why not take the most extreme measures? Sure. But now it's like you're saying, we've been through two seasons of it as an NFL, like, organization. Like, at some point, you kind of just be like, okay, guys really aren't getting that sick off of this, right? But yet we're changing and going to such drastic measures that you're making the game almost seem ridiculous. Like, what's crazy is, or like, rescheduling games for like on a Tuesday, right? And you have guys have like 5 days of rest. I'm telling you, as a player, that's unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable, because your body can't do that. Number one, you don't even have the amount of time to game plan. If another team played on Sunday, they have 7 days to game plan for the next game. You're coming off a really short week, right? And you're only supposed to have one of those. So I don't know. Like, it when it gets to changing and providing sort of, it elevates a team over the other and it gives them an advantage, that's why I feel like you're kind of overstepping and you may be too strong on some of your policy that you're rolling out. Like, I thought too, it was sort of crazy, like, if the starting quarterback of a team got COVID, it's like, oh, we're going to reschedule that game.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, are you really, though? Like, if it was like the third string quarterback, would you be rescheduling it? Like, no. He might have like two special team snaps a game. Like, I don't know, man. It's kind of iffy. It just to me, it's bias, right? And the moment you throw in bias, and from a person that has power, like the head of the organization, like the NFL, I don't know. You're overstepping.
It almost felt to me like, especially that 2020, when there was games being scheduled. And I know Tuesday, was there even maybe a Wednesday? Maybe the Ravens and Washington played on a Wednesday? And you're doing it in the name of player safety, but you're also rolling them out there the next Sunday.
Yep.
So
player safety, Monday.
Player safety, not really.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to your stint in Pittsburgh, because I know the listeners of this show, Jim talks about Pittsburgh all the time. He's a huge Steeler fan. He'll tell you he roots for two teams. Doing this job, one's the Steelers, one is OSU baseball, because he played there. What was that experience like? I mean, you're talking about one of the iconic brands, and you know the Niners. When I was growing up, they were, you know, they've been through the ups and downs, as the Steelers have too. But it seems like since Ben has been there in 2003 on, the Steelers were always one of those teams that had a chance to make the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Just depending on what happened in the playoffs. How cool was that? Just to know, hey, we're going to be in the mix. Every time.
Yeah, so I always go back when, you know, I think about that and think about how fortunate I was to go play in Pittsburgh. Like, I was laying in my bed, and I got a phone call from the new GM, John Lynch, in San Francisco. And I looked at it, and I was like, I know what that is.
Yeah.
So I didn't answer it. I looked at my wife. I shook her, and I said, hey, I was really early, and I shook her, and I said, hey, I got to talk to you about something. She's like, what is it? And I was like, I just got a phone call from John Lynch. She's like, who's John Lynch? I was like, that's the GM, babe. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And she's like, what does that mean? And I was like, well, it only means one thing. It means we're being traded somewhere, which I had heard rumors, mm-hmm. Going back to February. So this is, I had just broken out of training camp. So I went through training camp with San Francisco. I think it was two days before the fourth preseason game, which I'm like, I've been playing for 4 years. I'm not playing that game.
Right.
Right. I got to get ready for week one. So I'd already made that mind up. I'd already endured the training camp and like gotten through that injury free. And I was like, yes. And I get this phone call from John Lynch. And like I said, I'd heard rumors back in February. I was like, there's a potential that Vance is going to be traded somewhere. And I was reading that. I'd heard about it. I actually went and talked to Kyle Shanahan, talked to other people in the organization about it. And they're like, no, I assure you, you're going to be here. So I was like, okay. And I kind of just let it go.
Right.
So I got this phone call and I'm like, okay. So I looked at Kendi and I was like, let's start talking about all the places we could go. Let's do the opposite. Let's talk about all the places we don't want to go.
Right.
I was like, we don't want to go play in the cold. We don't want to go to a losing team. So we started rallying off all these teams. Of course, Pittsburgh gets cold, but I called John Lynch back and he said, hey, I just want to let you know we traded you to Pittsburgh. Ben's going to be your quarterback. Obviously, Mike Tomlin's a fantastic coach, loves his players. Obviously, they've won a lot of Super Bowls, I think, and anyway, I was like, it's a great fit for you. I think you're going to do really, really well. And I was like, okay. And so I immediately felt betrayed, but at the same time, like this wash over of sort of excitement and just, you know, new things. that kind of took over really quick. And so I got to Pittsburgh. It was kind of like going back in time. I mean, they're so old school with all the things that they do. And one thing that I love about them, too, is just the fact that they're so just they commit to the people that they have, right? Like, they're so trustworthy, transparent, and they just they allow guys to sort of move up the ranks. Like, if they, you know, maybe you're an undrafted guy, like, you put in the hard work, they're going to trust you, and they're going to allow you to sort of make a name for yourself based off of your work ethic, how much you're going to commit yourself, and then just whenever you have an opportunity, go make a play. They do the same thing with their front office, right? Like, anyway, they're just – they're really loyal. And I really love that about them. I knew that of them. Obviously, going to play with Ben, I was like, dude, Ben, get to throw me the ball? Absolutely. So I get there, and I'll sort of fast forward through all the middle of the meet here in a second. But I just – I focus on, like, the first couple of days because it was a whirlwind. I jumped – so I get this phone call at, like, 7 a.m. I'm on a plane at noon. I land. I have a playbook in my hand. I get to a hotel. I do all my physicals. I check in. I get a playbook in my hand, and they're like, okay, tomorrow we fly out to Charlotte. Or, sorry, tomorrow we fly out to go play the Panthers.
Yeah.
And you're going to be playing. And I was like, surely I misheard you. I don't know this playbook. I don't know the scheme. I don't know anything. And you're telling me I've literally just got off a plane, basically, and, like, I'm going to be thrown into, like, the fourth preseason
game. And it's a fourth preseason game.
Fourth preseason game? I'm like, yep, you heard us right. So I'm, like, frantically trying to, like, get through the playbook and do all these things and just learn base concepts. Anyway, I go out in the game, and Ben's basically calling half the game. It's kind of interesting because, like, some things he does no-huddle stuff all the time whenever he was playing, calling games and stuff like that. So it was sort of like a way for him to practice that. Obviously, he wasn't suiting up. And so, anyway, it was just a whirlwind of 48 hours. I play in this game. I think I played, like, 30 snaps. And I was just like, man, this has just been a crazy ride. But anyway, my time at Pittsburgh was so fun. You know, we didn't have the success that we really wanted to have. I mean, we thought we were absolutely a playoff contender every single year, falling short a couple of those years. But, man, it was so fun. The one time we went and played Patriots, and it was just like – you have that really that call that they made where Jesse James, another tight end that we have, and he said he fumbled the ball. He actually reached the ball over the goal line. Should have been a touchdown. Extremely controversial. Made headlines and all that. Like, it was such a fun ride. Then we play the Jaguars in the playoffs. We get knocked out, and they're like an up and coming team. Mm-hmm. Oh man, it was a lot of fun. And the amount of time I had with Ben too was just a blast to get to know him. Playing with him, obviously, like, I was watching him when I was in, like, second grade, and he was playing. It's, like, crazy to think about, but man, it was a journey. But like you said, I mean, we've said this a couple times, but being able to play for two championship, you know, caliber teams, wouldn't have traded it for anything, especially finishing my career in Pittsburgh. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it could have been like the Jets and Cleveland or something.
For
right?
sure, right? Like, it could have been terrible.
All right, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, the quarterback thing, the two you played with, couldn't seem more night and day.
Yeah.
But we'll hit that. Maybe some golf, too. British Open week. I think it's going to be fun. It's supposed to be fiery. A lot of low shots coming in there this week. Vance McDonald hanging out with us here in studio today. Okay, so you said you've done a little golf, not a whole bunch of golf. Do you watch golf? Do you enjoy watching it, or is it just kind of one of those things that's there?
I tune into the Masters, but for the most part, no.
Okay, so, yeah, Masters is, I mean, anybody growing up in America, most people would say that's their favorite tournament just because of the familiarity with how cool it is. And for me, a lot of it is the idea that I'm never going to get to play that golf course. And so you want to go there so bad just to be able to – have you been?
No.
Okay, I haven't either. British Open's totally different. You know, it's kind of ugly to see on TV a lot of times. It's not real green. It's more of like what we're seeing out here right now, actually, mm-hmm. With the grass dying. And it's a lot of weather. Like, weather plays huge parts in that, and maybe little bounces that one guy gets and one guy doesn't. You know, for you guys, there's some of that, too. And there's definitely luck involved. And like you're talking about, you know, referees missing a clear touchdown. Remember that play. I know exactly which one you're talking about against the Patriots. Clear touchdown that doesn't go your way. How much does that, as a viewer of, say, this weekend, you realize how much luck has. Would you rather have it in your control? Like, say the Masters is more in the player's control versus what's happening in the conditions and what's happening on the ground with the way the humps and bumps
right.
roll.
Like, I think in football, just particularly, like, the biggest thing that you can look at is, all right, you've gathered and created an amazing team. You have great starting quarterback. You have a healthy offensive line. You know, you have key players in positions, and you're a playoff contender, Super Bowl contender. That's all great and dandy. If you can stay healthy. To get to that point is the biggest thing in football. And I mean, like, you can have, like, the most innocent little thing, like a guy just finishing to the whistle, and, like, there happens to be a pile right there, and a guy's knee just goes the wrong way, right? It's an ACL, an MCL, something, I mean, meniscus, and the guy's done. And it's, like, the most innocent little 3 seconds of football that they've played, and it happens to be, like, a season-ending thing. So, like, you know, 1 year, I think we lost 4 starting defensive players. And, like, you were talking about, like, 3 years ago when the Steelers were just starting to just put a ton of money into their defense. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, we do that, like, and they started going down, and it's like, man, like, here we lost, like, 4 games in a row because we don't have 3 of our best defensive players, right? And I don't know. It's just you can find those little niches in all sports for the most part. Like you're saying, with weather and golf, like, are you kidding me? Like, I just watched a guy before me on this hole. Like, he got that bounce, and
right.
I get it, right? There's just certain things that there are variables that you can't measure, right, because they're unknown until they happen, and it's just one of those things that this is the way the coin flips.
Yeah, and it does seem like that. I mean, for anybody that's played any fantasy football, you walk right out of that draft thinking, oh, yeah.
I got this.
I got Derrick Henry and Christian McCaffrey until you don't. Yep. And it does, like, the luck part of it, I think the injuries are the luck part of it a lot of times in the NFL, just because the same thing can happen to 2 dudes and one of them gets unfortunate. And like you said, their cleat catches wrong. And next thing you know, their knee's blown out.
And then you look at the NBA, right? And, like, you could have a guy, you know, hamstring sprain, anything like that. Like, and they're out 20 games. Okay, well, they have so many opportunities.
Right.
We only have 7. Well, I was going to say 16. We only have 17, which is weird to say, but. Yeah.
And even sometimes the luck of when it happens.
Yep.
Because obviously the earlier, the better because of how few opportunities there are. But maybe.
I
remember thinking about the Steelers franchise. I think it was, I guess, 2010, the last Super Bowl when they played Green Bay. Green Bay was a team that was decimated early. And then all of a sudden, their record's terrible, but they snuck in and they had everybody off a team that looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And they just rolled through.
For sure.
Like they're supposed to, or people thought they were supposed to going in. You know, sometimes it's even that. It's if you can have them early enough to where you get back. And in some ways, to me, if you can just kind of tread water, it almost helps because you don't have the wear and tear on 4 or 5 guys' bodies that are getting back when everybody else is kind of tired.
For sure. And I don't know. I keep going back to Steelers. But, like, watching Najee Harris this past year, he was phenomenal. But I just think, like, man, this guy's going to learn at some point. Like, I knew what was going on the sideline. I could guarantee he was like, I want this snap. Like, let me go in and get this snap. And, you know, at running back, you have so much depth. They might not all be the same caliber of player, but you have a ton of depth at running back. And a lot of times, like, you really – it's one of those positions where you need to share the wealth. And Najee's going to learn at some point, like, he can't get, you know, 90% of the snaps at running back in a game because, like, it's a grind. And you got to last through the whole season in the playoffs.
It's a league of extraordinary talented dudes.
Yeah.
Was there a guy or two that you just kind of what? Whoa.
Yeah.
Like this, you know, even a notch above that.
Cam Haywards is one of those guys. And I think about, like, you know, if you just look at Ben, for example, like the finesse that you have to have at quarterback, the amount of athleticism, but just I would say just sort of wit. Like, you just have to see things before they happen, and you know, and that's a lot of success at that position. But, like, a guy who has to, like, beat his head into a wall every single play like Cam Haywards, I'm telling you, the guy is so strong, but he's so, like, if I could use the word, like, spunky and, like, really agile and quick, he's just unfair. Like, you shouldn't have a body like Cam Haywards and be able to do the things that he does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another question I get a lot is, like, what's one of the hardest guys you ever had to block? And I think about this kind of all the time, and I always go back, like, early in my career, and I think, like, did I just not have the technique down? Like, what was it about that? But, like, I just say no. Brandon Graham was one of the hardest guys I've ever had to block. And the reason why was his motor. The guy never stopped. And I'm even in the middle of plays, and I'm like, the whistle's going to be blowing any second. I'm like, Brandon, just let up. He's like, no. And he's, like, just putting his forearm in my throat, trying to, like, knock me over. He was such a small little powerhouse, like, super strong guy. And, like, I couldn't ever get underneath him. And, like, anyway, it was super unfair. And I just think, like, guys like that, another guy coming into Pittsburgh, I look at James Harrison.
Yeah.
The guy was built like he's made out of rock. Like, it made no sense. But at the same time, he was so quick. And, like, he had this – and you watch Cam Hayward and you watch T.J. Watt do it too. They just put their one arm out and they just drive a 320-pound offensive lineman back and set him out on the quarterback. Like, it makes no sense. Anyway, there's a lot of guys, man, that I could go through. But at the same time, like, it's like you're saying, it's almost unfair. Like, they shouldn't be able to do the things they do physically. But yet they can because they're so talented.
How hard? I mean, we all think of a 45-year-old dude. How hard is what Tom Brady's doing? How hard is that to do?
It absolutely is. And I even think about it from my position. I got out whenever I was 31. And I just think, like, dude, I'm not 20 years old. I can't like, roll my ankle and the next day I wake up and I'm like, oh, it feels okay.
Right.
Right? Like, if I roll my ankle now, like, dude, it's, like, 2 weeks. I'm, like, hobbling. It's terrible. Like, you don't recover the way that you recover. Like, it takes a ton of discipline. Right? Like, you might cheat, eat a bowl of ice cream, things like that, like, for a game, and it's like, that's going to throw some inflammation on your joints. Like, and it's a real thing. You're going to feel that the next day.
Right.
I'm not kidding. It takes so much discipline to do what he's doing. And, like, you talk about Tom, the greatest of all time, doing it, still at a high level, and the fact that he wants to come back and do it some more, like, God willing, like, you go for it, buddy. But it'll be really interesting to watch him this year. And I think he's just tremendous. The fact that he can do that. And it's like I said, I think more of what he's doing now is a display of his mental fortitude, because that's really what it is at his age.
Yeah. And like you said, the discipline, like, as a 25-year-old getting into the league, you know, summertime, do whatever you want to.
I'm playing video games.
Exactly.
I can do whatever I want. I'll roll out of bed and play the sport.
He's got to do it almost 24/7, 365 to be able to.
He has to.
You'd think the one time we saw him drunk, you can tell he hadn't drank very much.
Exactly. I remember when I had one beer.
Vance, thanks so much for joining us. Anytime this week, come on back.
Okay.
We got a seat right there for you.
Thanks, Aaron.
We can get into all kinds of other stuff. Vance McDonald, Rice, the Niners, Pittsburgh Steelers, 8-year career in the NFL. We thank him so much. Thank you guys for the text. We'll do it again tomorrow. Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cow. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered early.